show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Indeed, downhill toward the end of December, downhill toward the end of 2014. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. It is, in fact, the 29th day of December, 2014. My poor Mountaineers. Oh, my God. Didn't get to watch it. I sure got to listen to it. Ugh. Flat as a pancake. Yeah. So, anyway, let's see, we got tonight, tomorrow night, and, yeah, okay, just three broadcasts left in 2014. And my apologies for being late to the microphone for this evening. I had, my daughter had a doctor's appointment in Charleston, and that necessitated a whole bunch of driving today, and got back as quickly as I could, but just pulled in a little bit late. Again, my apologies. We will be live for New Year's Eve. We'll have, and then Malloy will be back live. I don't think Malloy's live tonight. But at any rate, we'll be live for New Year's Eve. And New Year's Day, New Year's Day, no program. Just no. New Year's Day is the an orgy of college football, and yes, I intend to watch it. And of course, there'll be some cooking going on, some corned beef, some cabbage, some black-eyed peas, some Hoppin' John, you know, that kind of thing. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy, in Vermont, loud and clear on TuneIn, and better late than no Bob. Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate that. We got a great group going in the Horn chat room for this Moran Monday. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, B. Wilson. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, John. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Stockton Larry. Good evening, Texas T. Good evening to our longtime, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. So we're all done with Christmas now. Hallelujah. Glory. Don't have to worry about that for, 361 more days. Goody. And, of course, a reminder, we try to keep this whole thing going via listener contributions. We need to raise $150 tonight. And that, you know, $150 every night is what we try to do to keep all this working. So, 15 at 10, 10 at 15, 1 at 150, 3 at 50, 6 at 25, 2 at 75, whatever your preference, but it would be great if we could if we could stay even with all of that as we get toward the end of the year. Now, of course, we all know this is the final Moran Monday of 2014. You know, if this was a much bigger operation, I think maybe we would go back through all the Moran Mondays and just cull the Moraniest of the Morans. Because, see, that's how it works in big-time for-profit media. Everybody just sort of lays low and, you know, this is a mail-it-in kind of week with retrospectives and year-end and blah, blah, blah. But, the other problem is that if you use the last Moran Monday for a retrospective of Moranity of the foregoing year, one, it eats up the entire program, and two, you just may miss out. You never know when the last Moran Monday of the year is going to have some of your richest, most delightful Moranity. Right? Yeah. And that may very well be the case this evening. Oh, yes. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Forgot about that part. Always do. Yeah, Morans. Right. Exactly.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. Get your feet moving to the beat of that swinging calliope sound. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you can hear Morans of all stripe, all variety. That's right. You can hear birther Morans, deather Morans, tenther Morans, bagger Morans, booger-eating Morans, bircher Morans, libertarian Morans, republican Morans, one and all. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this here is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. That's right, reach in for less than 5 cents an hour per hour of programming produced by this here Circus Network. You will experience the wide subhuman variety of Moranity that runs backwards and forwards and does loop-de-loops all over this here once great nation. Advisory going out to parents with small children or bags or cameras or wallets or purses. Or keep them closely in your possession when passing through the Moran Monday tent, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Stockton Larry asking in the chat room, with a glut of Morans, shouldn't they be cheaper? Well, see, that's the thing. Morans are the exception that proves the rule. No limitation on supply, no flooding of the market of Morans ever affects price. Morans, well, they're just not subject to the same laws of economics, supply, and demand that the rest of the universe runs on. No.
Yoplait has the...
Oh, who's auto-running an ad? Sorry, bastards. I hate them. DDT doesn't even slow them down. That sounded like a yogurt ad. But anyway. Of course, it goes almost without saying that the richest and most fertile field of Moranity is to be found at the headquarters of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Yeah. You know we have a missing aircraft. And by we, I mean humanity. Search on in the Java Sea. I was listening to National Petroleum Radio on the way home, and I heard them announce that the Indonesian government has asked for American help in trying to find the missing aircraft. The State Department issued a statement saying that they were studying the request. Really? Didn't we used to be in America that would say, what, you need help? Sure, we'll get right on that. Now we study requests. What, to see if there's a secret message from Tralfamador? We're talking, of course, about Air Asia Flight QZ8501. And immediately when I heard that the plane had gone missing from radar, my first thought was that that no one should tell Don Lemon, lest he blame the disappearance on a North Korean dope-smoking black hole. Right. But it that's okay. Something bad like this happens, and immediately, the morans are out from behind the baseboards and scurrying around the sink and the base of the refrigerator and all over the kitchen, just, you know, because morans. News Ninja Carol Baker pointing out, you know, I'll bet if I invent a, you know, some sort of tracking device, we'd know where those planes went. You think I could be onto something? You know, that thing might sell, Carol. You might just have a winner there. But anyway, leave it to Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. Well, that's true, too, Gerald. Gerald pointing out about the request for American assistance. Gerald says, I doubt we'd be much help anyway. We couldn't find all those WMDs in Iraq after all those years. Well, but that's the difference, Gerald. The Air Asia flight QZ8501 was real and not a figment of George Bush's imagination. The WMDs in Iraq, on the other hand, were matters of mad psychopathic delusion. Leave it, though, to the experts at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to give us the real reason for the disappearance of the AirAsia flight. Wait. Did I issue the hockey puck warning? I'm a little tired today. Maybe I didn't. Hockey pucks, duct tape, not kidding.
We're now going to bring in a former FAA insider saying that the different way other countries train their pilots may be the real reason Air Asia flight has gone missing. Joining us now on the phone is former FAA official Scott Brenner. Scott, thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Let's talk about the differences. I mean, even when we think about temperature, it's Fahrenheit or Celsius. It's
No. Yes. Really. That's where she went. The differences in how we train our pilots. Air Asia flight QZ8501 was brought down by the demonic Celsius temperature scale. I told you, there really wasn't much room for, there was not much room for error here with the hockey puck, was there? You may have disturbed the neighbors before you got it really taped in real good.
Let's talk about the differences. I mean, even when we think about temperature, it's Fahrenheit or Celsius, it's kilometers or miles. You know, everything about their training could be similar but different, right?
Correct. Yeah, well, I think you see just a large reliance on automatic pilot and the requirement that pilots use that automatic pilot more often than probably here in the U.S. And a lot of that is just because, as some of your previous guests have said, a lot of crashes are due to pilot error. So if you try and eliminate any potential risk, you try and eliminate the pilot's ability to make, you know, incorrect inputs into the aircraft.
So it's not just differences in the way that we measure things. It's a difference in the way that our pilots are actually trained. Is it?
See, here I am again, like Odysseus lashed to the mast while you guys, while the crew has their ears stopped up with beeswax and doesn't hear the singing of the sirens. Yes, 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 Carol, the metric system done brought down that plane. And to be fair, when I first saw this story, I thought back in my own life. I was fortunate. I had a wonderful, wonderful grandmother who imparted to me great wisdom and lots of heritage and history from our own family. Told me about the first time she ever saw an airplane fly through the sky over West By God, Virginia. She was born in 1894, and all her life she was a seeker after knowledge, but when she got up in age, oh, probably, you know, 80, some things just stopped making sense. One of those things was the metric system. And some of you of a certain age may well remember that there was actually a concerted effort, I think it was the Carter administration, maybe the Ford administration, to try to move the United States ever so slowly toward understanding metrics. Now, most of the scientific community, all of the scientific community understands metrics. It's just a hell of a lot easier to, because the imperial system that we use, hey, we're an empire. The imperial system that we use is sort of the I before C, but only after kumquat approach to weights and measures. And apparently, this God-fearing, patriotic fox blonde is of the opinion that the imperial weights and measures we use are infinitely better than the metric system. The metric system, which is based, of course, on the magic number 10. If you can deal with tens, you can deal with the metric system. You know, 1,000 millimeters to a meter, 100 centimeters to a meter, 1,000 meters to a kilometer, 1,000 kilometers to a kilogram. No.
Where are the Ferraris?
Oh, shut up. Another damned ad. But Gran had a hard time with the metric system. She really did. And I remember the one thing that I remember most of all coming out of that was her asking, and you know, this is, she was quite serious, and she was quite convinced of it, that the metric system would require us all be gentle. She was a brilliant woman. She was just out of her age. She was convinced that the metric system would require us to have new calendars and clocks. And sort of like Fox News viewers today, there was no shaking that belief. But at the time she was talking about these things, let's see, she was 83 years old. None of these Fox News TV babbling blatherskates are anywhere even remotely approaching 83 years old. If you're 83 years, I expect to be completely baffled by a hell of, if I make it to 83, a hell of a lot of my world. I'm probably not going to understand why all my great-grandchildren are running around with those little plug-in thingies in their necks. And why, instead of talking anymore, they all just sit with the wire plugged into their neck and blink at each other. I might even wonder if I need a new clock. But here we have, in terms of morality, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda at its absolute finest. This rivals Don Lemon over at Chicken Noodle News, wondering if the Malaysian air flight got sucked into a wandering black hole. Maybe, Don, it was a chronosynclastic infundibulum. We don't have obligatory Kurt Vonnegut references every evening. Perhaps we should. No, I want to enjoy this in all its glory. Let's back up a little bit.
To make, you know, incorrect inputs into the aircraft.
So it's not just differences in the way that we measure things, it's a difference in the way that our pilots are actually trained. Is it not as safe in that part of the world? Because our viewers may be thinking international travel, is it safe? Is it not safe?
Because, you know, those people sometimes fly airplanes over there. Not good God-fearing, upstanding, patriotic, right-wing, American, Bible-believing, Christian pilots, men's. Right? International, is it safe? Is it not safe? In the metric system, does down mean up and up mean down? Left is right and right is...
No, I mean, it's incredibly safe. It's the safest mode of travel you can have. But just on the training, you know, absolutely. I believe our U.S. pilots are very well trained.
Yes, they are. And so are other pilots. And here's what's fascinating from the video end of this little clip. At the same time this guy is talking, they're showing a weather map of that particular neck of the woods. And there's all kinds of weather all over the place, some of which runs from yellow to orange to really frightening blood red. And the really frightening blood red part is right over the Java Sea, which is where the plane went down. Metrics. It was metrics. Don't you know? Carol pointing out, maybe it's because they're, that counting to 10 shit is hard. Maybe it's because their deformities account for extra or missing digits. Happens when you swim in the shallow end of the gene pool. Well, and you may have to reach up on top of your head to keep counting. You know, that baby's arm growing out of your ear or whatever. Exactly. Oh, poor Jeremy. We have better trained flight staff, and our measuring system is better. Oh, my. What the? The stupidest. It hurts as us. Oh, break's over. Time to get back on my head. Perhaps someone should mention that I recall a few people who were trained in the early 2000s to only make flight in-flight turns, no landing or takeoff, and no one complained about that training until after 9/11/2001. And you know what? The metric system didn't seem to factor in that either, did it? Oh, let's go back, because there's more wonderfulness.
Not only for situations like this, but they also actually fly the aircraft when they're in the cockpit. Versus a lot of times, just, you know, as soon as those wheels are up,
right.
A lot of times folks are required, foreign pilots are required to hit that autopilot up until almost the wheels come back down again.
And Scott, I think that gets to an issue. A lot of these accidents, incidents recently have occurred in Asia. beyond its training, what about cultural aspects, certain respects for procedure, certain, you know, not the cowboy attitude, I'm not going to wait for someone to tell me to move out of the way. Could that play a role also? Because it's been suggested even before the last 24 hours that there is a distinct difference.
No.
No. See, that's what you want in your cockpit there, is you want a pilot with some cowboy attitude. Hit him up, move him out. Yeah, just one big old cattle drive across the wild blue yonder. Right? Yeah. Cowboy attitude. That's because that's what Americans have. Cowboy attitudes, Americans.
Well, that's a great question. We had an incident out in San Francisco just a few years ago, where the pilot landed, or the co-pilot lined up perfectly and landed about 20 yards short and busted off the wheels as he came into the seawall in San Francisco.
Man, see, nobody will, that guy's never going to be invited back on Fox because, of course, the Fox San Francisco affiliate was rather badly abused in that regard, in that they were told that the Fox affiliates reported that the pilot's name was Sum Ting Wong. Remember that? Co-pilot's name was what? Wee Fook? Fox reported that. Yeah, nope. I don't think you're allowed to mention that on Fox. No.
There was a classic example where you had a junior pilot almost afraid to ask a senior pilot if he was on course or not. Hmm. It's definitely a major issue for some of these countries.
Now, and there's been a couple of crashes in Asia that have come down to that very issue of whether or not the junior pilot questions the senior pilot, whether the senior pilot is willing to take that advice. And so much of the training in the U.S. is about how the pilot and co-pilot work together to solve problems, right, and make sure that they get up the safest solution. Right. Scott Brenner, thanks so much for joining us from the FAA, offering your insight on the big differences that really do exist, not only to your point culturally, but also simply in the way the training goes down.
Right, because, of course, everybody but American pilot is culturally inferior because they're using the metric system. How do you not start more in Monday with that? Jumping, Jehoshaphat. Metrics. Yeah. But, to be sure, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda did not have a lock on. And please, this is a serious question, and I welcome your attempt at an answer because all my attempts have just failed. Why is it that plane crashes bring out the stupidest in the for-profit media? Because while Fox News TV Radio Rwanda was blaming the metric system, yeah, they probably had too many kilograms in their nautical miles. Yeah. And you know, the planes don't fly well in those degrees Celsius. Wow. You want to bet every one of those idiots who said all that are making at least $100,000 a year to say that stupid stuff? I mean, just remember, those are professional broadcasters. Don't try that at home. But over at Chicken Noodle News, desperately trying to be a little foxier, you get CNN aviation analyst from Charleston, South Carolina, Stan Mary Shivo. And she wanted to put people's minds at ease about the potential cause of this disappearance of the airliner.
At this point, given it was extremely bad weather, the chances of this being some sort of a terrorist activity are very small because most terrorist activities take place in good weather.
Did you get that? Couldn't possibly have been the likelihood of this having been a terrorist actor are minimal at best, because terrorists never strike in bad weather. Mary Schiavo is the woman who brought us the response to Don Lemon's black hole question. A small black hole would suck in our entire universe, so we know it's not that. A Bermuda Triangle is often weathered. Lost is a TV show. She must have gotten the memo that, let's not take all the fun out of this. Hey, terrorists seldom strike in bad weather. Right, that makes sense, Gerald pointing out terrorists only strike in good weather because they only get visual flight rules training. You get the idea we're going to be busy tonight? You get the idea that you might chew through two or three NHL-grade hockey pucks? That's true, Lottie, noting, Bob, it was the gremlin on the wing that took the engine apart while they were flying. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, Bob, it's because they don't understand Bernoulli's principle. Yeah. There's more. They believe that those big old airplanes stay in the air by magic. Well, look, for the average individual, most science, most engineering is magic. We just don't like to call it that. God. Oh, by the way, thank you. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Jeremy got us started on fundraising this evening. We have now only $140 to go to get the week started. Thank you, Jeremy. I hope a good number of people will jump out there and stand with you side by side and shoulder to shoulder. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. As a young one, I had to learn the imperial system. Years later, I can't remember how long a chain is or how many make up a mile. It was a horrid and confusing mess. Yes, because it comes from an era where knowledge was to be not disseminated so much as passed around among the elite. I don't know how many pecks are in a bushel. And to be quite fair, I can't figure out what a board foot is. By the way, aircraft distances are measured universally, neither in kilometers nor miles, but in nautical miles, which is a different animal altogether. And everybody, even those cowboy American pilots, use the Celsius scale for temperature. Wow, thank you, Carol. Thank you very kindly. Jumping right out there alongside Jeremy, and all of a sudden, we have only $115 to go in fundraising this evening. Thank you ever so kindly. Isn't that sad how America's fallen, though? We got perfectly good cowboy airplane pilots out there using that sissy centigrade system. Anyway, Robert in Australia continues, Australia went metric back in the early 70s. Well, that's when we were trying to, pretty much, and the right wing in America hollered, Commies! Really. I remember it. There was an objection to the metric system as being communist. Yes. Because, you know, then the next thing you know, we'll have to write C, will be just like the CCCP, which isn't even CCCP. And nobody will be able to read anymore. We'll have to get new clocks, and the calendars will be all, and we'll be having Christmas in August. Now, Robert says, Australia went metric back in the early 70s. I've been using it ever since. It's dead simple. It was all the converting back and forth between metric and imperial in the early days that proved to be a pain as we all got used to it. As far as I'm aware, commercial pilots worldwide all have to have the same training. They won't let you fly a 767 unless you're qualified. And I assume American pilots are just as qualified as pilots worldwide. I close, Robert says, by saying, Qantas. Definitely Qantas. Qantas never crashed. Well, that's just great, Raymond, but Qantas doesn't fly out of Cincinnati. Yeah. Definitely Qantas. So, it wasn't terrorists, but it probably was the metric system. In the billiard room with the lead pipe. Oh, thank you. Now I know, Carol pointing out, 4 pecks in a bushel and a board foot of lumber is equal to 1 foot of lumber, 1 foot wide, and 1 inch thick because I'm a nerd. At some point in time, that's going to be useful to me. 4 pecks. Acres in a hectare? Anybody? Maybe we can make this, maybe I'm the moron here. Oh, by the way, another nomination before we get too far into the program. A nomination for everybody who shelled out money to see the interview. Of course, I'm an excellent driver. Drive slow in the driveway. Kmart sucks. Of course, this is not my underwear. Everybody who went, I heard the numbers for the interview. Do you realize the... Where? Somebody tell me, where is William Charles Duncanfield buried because the earth is moving around his grave? He is laughing. He is laughing, and the dirt is chuckling along in reverberation. Yes. The interview made almost as much in this opening as it was expected to make had nothing happened whatsoever. No, really? Really, Carol? A hectare is 2.47 acres? 2.47, not 2.5, not 2.4, not even 2.45, 2.47. But only in months with R's in them, right? No. online sales for the interview came in at $15 million over the course of 4 days. In a limited release that included, I was told, I believe on Facebook, I believe by our buddy, was it Dwayne? Even in Eastern Kentucky, Stan, they ran the movie because we're not going to let no North Korean dictator keep us from having the freedom to watch a really bad movie. $15 million in online receipts and $3 million at the traditional box office. And Sony laughs all the way to the bank. Honest to God, I think it would have only been fair if they would have printed this way to the egress on the back of the tickets. man, that is some world-class, pro-level hucksterism. Good God. And Amy Pascal sitting somewhere in Hollywood typing another email, I guess. Suckers! Amazing. Just amazing. Oh, and there's ever so much more. Yes, absolutely, Sparky pointing out. The interview is even being shown here in the state of Jefferson. Well, of course it's being shown in the state of Jefferson, because freedom! Wolverines! Absolutely. Well, I'll cut the filibobster short a little bit. Open up the phone lines for anybody who wants to participate. You know how to reach the program, of course, area code 304-574-8178. Or the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. See how it works? Yeah. Skype to Skype, it's just Bob Kincaid Horn. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And email bobkincaid@gmail.com. Twitter at Bob Kincaid, Bob Kincaid on Facebook. Dear God, how can't you reach the program? Ah, hell, you know what? You can stand out on the back stoop and yell, and we'll listen real hard. This is listener-supported conversation radio, riding down toward the end of the lonely last of the 2014 trail. $115 in fundraising to go this evening. Trying to finish out 2014 to the OK Corral. We'll be back. Light them phone lines up. Yeah!
An old cowboy went riding out one dark and windy day. Up on a ridge he rested as he went along his way. When all at once a mighty herd of red-eyed cows he saw plowing through the ragged sky. And up a cloudy draw. Their brands were still on fire and their hooves were made of steel. Their horns were black and shiny, and their hot breath he could feel. A bolt of fear went through him as they thundered through the sky. For he saw the riders coming hard, and he heard their mournful cry. Yippee-yi-yo! Their eyes were blurred, their shirts all soaked with sweat. He's riding hard to catch that herd, but he ain't caught them yet. Cause they've got to ride forever on that range up in the sky. All the horses snorting fire as they ride on, hear their cry. Riders loped on by him, he heard one call his name. If you want to save your soul from hell, riding on our range, Then cowboy, change your ways. They are with us, you will ride. Trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. Yippee-yi-yo.
Couldn't resist. You really didn't expect me to. No, of course not. Yeah, Ghost Riders in the Sky, Johnny Cash, sure. By the way, this here being More In Monday. Oh, first things first, thank you very much, Gerald. We are now down under the $100 mark. We are at $95 to go for the evening. Thank you very kindly. More than happy to see anybody wanting to jump in alongside Carol and Gerald and Jeremy. Plenty of room indeed. It is More In Monday on the Horn. It is the 29th day of December 2014. And since there was some mention of the interview, I got to share this quote. North Korea is upset. They continue to claim they had nothing to do with the Sony hack, although they approve of it. And in point of fact, I've seen a number of articles in the last few days saying it's been conclusively proven that North Korea didn't have anything to do with the Sony hack, you know, there with their high-powered 386 machine running Windows 3.11 for warehouses. North Korea over the weekend issued a statement. Yeah, and it has all the charm. Well, I don't know. I think we lose some of the charm in translation. The North Koreans said, in actuality, the U.S., a big country, started disturbing the internet operation of major media of the DPRK. Not knowing shame like children playing a tag. I never thought tag was, I don't know, maybe in North Korea tag is a game, it's a game of shame. Tag, you are it. You see, you are not fully human, you're merely it. You're a genderless thing, it. Because we are playing a tag and there is no shame. Recess must just be really hell. But unhappy, not content with that critique, the statement then continued, Obama always goes reckless in words and deeds like a monkey in a tropical forest. At which point, Rents Priebus asked if he could get Kim Jong-un's phone number, that he would like to seriously consider a discussion of offering statehood to North Korea as East Mississippi. Jesus. Who knew the North Koreans were racists? Oh, but there's ever so much this evening. Lots and lots. Lots of fun to be had. How many lots? So many lots that I can't find. I'm struggling to get through all of my tabs. All right, Well, like I said earlier, the retrospective, of the Moran retrospective we could have if we were a big for-profit media operation. You might recall there at the beginning of the year, early on, we had the story of the poor little baby in New York City who had contracted a sexually transmitted disease by having oral genital contact between the non-consenting baby and his moil in an orthodox bris, an orthodox circumcision session. Yes. Well, I had to double-check this story. It comes out of the Daily Mail in the UK. I had to double-check because it looked like that story, but it wasn't. It's dated 2:31 p.m., December 26th, 2014. Headline, fourth, not first, no, we had that, nor second, nor third, no, fourth. New York Jewish baby this year treated for herpes after controversial orthodox circumcision method. Baby was born in November and showed signs of herpes infection on the penis shortly after being circumcised, but has since recovered. From herpes? Recovered? The method of circumcision in question ends with the man performing the ceremony, a moil, sucking blood from the baby's foreskin. This is the 17th recorded case of herpes in babies from a circumcision since the year 2000. No consent. And of course, the state of New York has tried to do something about this. Among other things, they require moils to have a signed consent form from parents before the moil can perform the ritual. And that's been on the books since 2012. Hint, four babies have gotten herpes from their moil. And here's the part of the Daily Mail story that just sort of, how about that? Many moils have ignored the new regulation, and some orthodox groups argue that the new law is an infringement on their First Amendment rights. Yeah, I'm beginning to get a little bit annoyed with all the abuses of the poor old First Amendment. Right. Orthodox groups are arguing that their First Amendment rights are violated by a regulation requiring the consent of parents to have oral genital contact between their 8-day-old baby boy and a guy in a situation in which the 8-day-old baby boy is unable to consent. And it's violating the orthodox grown-ups' rights under the First Amendment. I guess it goes without saying that the 8-day-old baby boy has no rights at all. He certainly does. And I'm not running off down the road of the weirdo men's rights movement. No. But imagine, what kind of brass does it take to say, hey, listen, sometimes little baby boys get herpes from the oral genital contact between the little 8-day-old boy and his moil, and God likes it that way. The little 8-day-old baby boy should have herpes because our invisible bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky wants the 8-day-old baby boy to have herpes. I'm thinking herpes was not part of the covenant. Because I've read that a good bit, you know, and you be mighty nation, yada, yada, yada. As long as you ritually mutilate your own genitals with your sons. But there's nothing in there about the herpes. And poor old Mayor Bill de Blasio says, we need to change the policy to find a way to protect all the children, but also respect religious tradition in an appropriate manner and come in day one to City Hall with a new policy that's fair. Well, day one was a while back, and there's still no new policy in place. And there's baby number four with genital herpes because God. This makes me crazy. It really does. Ron and Raleigh with an email. Bob, Bob, Bob. Oh, okay, this goes back to North Korea. Good. Once again, you've taken the dear leader out of context. The people of the PRNK love monkeys. It was in no way a racial slur against President Obama. Exactly, Ron, because we live in a post-racial world. Exactly. So here's a question. Yeah, we're back to the herpes. If your moil gives your 8-day-old son the herpes, can you sue the moil? Or did signing the consent form also imply consent to have herpes transmitted to your little baby boy? Or would it be would it be oppression to sue the moil for giving the 8-day-old baby boy herpes? No. We're not worried about oppressing the 8-day-old baby boy. We're worried about oppressing the moil. And the weirdo group of fundies that's... Where did he get the herpes? Is it an old revered Torah that he's reading? It licks a finger, and he licks a finger, and it's like the radium with the watch faces 100 years ago? Is that a 500-year-old case of herpes from, you know, page turning? Where'd the moil get the herpes? Why didn't the moil have the herpes? Did he know he had the herpes? If he knew, why was he moiling? Is anybody paying attention? I don't mean the Horn Family Commune congregation. I mean out there with whoever it is that's running that particular branch of orthodoxy. What does that sound like on the wedding when the marriage is arranged? Oh, well, I've got the herpes. Really? You've been with another woman? No. I got it from my moil at my bris. Oh, that's okay then. Maybe our little boy can get the herpes from his moil. Wouldn't that be charming, like father, like son? Tradition! If we had a religious sect And this is a serious question. If we had a religious sect, any religion, let's make it an entirely imaginary religion. Wait, they all are. That said, on the eighth day, we're going to take the left hand of a little newborn boy, and we're just going to cut off the tip of his little finger with no anesthetic, and then some guy is going to suck the blood out of his finger. Now, in this imaginary religion, would that be tolerated? Would the rest of the country just look at the practitioners of that cult, that sect, that whatever, and say, you're nuts, when they said, but our First Amendment rights, our God requires that all little boys have the ends chopped off of their left pinky. Ron and Raleigh, here's a suggestion. How about testing these nasty old moils for the virus? Did no one ever notice the moil sporting a big old cold sore? Yeah, maybe. But it was probably sent by God Almighty. It was a sacred cold sore. It was the cold sore of covenant. Right? Oh, Carol, help me.
Well, I got a question.
Oh, God, that's not helping.
Well, it might, just to put it in context. Let's say that during childbirth, the mother started hemorrhaging, and they gave her some blood.
Uh-huh.
Turns out that blood was tainted. Maybe, you know, they did some cutbacks down in the blood bank and didn't check it as carefully as they should have.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that woman has accidentally contracted HIV. Well, when that moil is giving what I can only term baby's first blowjob, if he gets HIV, is he going to then sue the parents? I mean, this is kind of a dicey two-way street here.
Well, it is. It is. And just to extend your metaphor a little bit, the hospital and the blood supplier who give that innocent mother HIV,
yeah,
they're gonna get sued. And they're going to have to write a check. Because the law recognizes that we cannot, and it seems to particularly apply here, the law recognizes that it can never make someone whole from a civil wrong. I mean, if you've been an offender bender and now you've got a screwed up neck, the law can't heal your neck.
Right.
It can only order the person who did it to you to pay for the harm in money. Well,
right.
That would obviously obtain in the case of the hospital giving the mother HIV.
Yeah.
Is the synagogue or the moil, and I don't know enough about the structure to understand it, because is there joint and several liability here? Or
I don't know. It just seems like such a dangerous practice, you know, the transfer of bodily fluids, saliva and blood, and it just seems wrong.
Well, okay. Since we're trying to work at this from sort of oblique angles.
Well, because, you know, my people weren't juiced, you know?
Back, you remember a few weeks ago when the whole country was in the grips of Ebola hysteria?
Well, yes, I think I still got it in my elbow.
Right. Yeah. You've got elbowler.
I've got tennis elbowler.
Well, part of the way it was explained, and by the way, the Ebola is still a significant, huge, terrible, ongoing problem in places like Sierra Leone.
Yeah, but they don't give a shit anymore because, you know, Republicans won.
Right. And we ain't got no more Americans with it. Although the United Kingdom had its first diagnosed case in the last day or so. It'll be interesting to find out if the UK freaks out like we did. They're the UK, you know. Oh, no, stiff up a lip and all. Be strong. We'll get through this. This is not the end of the beginning, but it is the beginning of the end. This isn't the beginning of the end, but it is the end of the beginning. And all that Churchillian stuff. No, so one of the things that we learned was that the reason Ebola spread the way it did was because of the cultural and religious practices of the peoples there relative to how one deals with a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess the dead body has to be washed and lovingly tended to and maybe even given a hug or whatever. And so authorities went immediately into the Ebola zone and said, you got to stop that. I mean, I know it's a religious tradition that you've been doing for thousands and thousands of years, but this is the 21st century, and everybody's going to be dead from Ebola if you don't stop this.
Hold up, Hoss. That was not a Christian tradition, so it doesn't count.
It wasn't part of the Judeo-Christian tradition. You're forgetting your Judeo there.
I don't even know Judeo.
Well, you know, Judeo!
Judeo!
Daylight come and we... No, never
one
mind.
Go home. I just scared the cat.
Poor Cat Stevens.
Poor guy.
Poor little fella. But no, I mean, we didn't have any problem telling people in West Africa to put the kibosh on some religiously unnecessary traditions. Why this? I mean, because see, there's a little really terrifying paragraph in this news story, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Gothamist reports that unlike other infants who have died from herpes infection, this baby has recovered and was released from the hospital today. This is the 17th recorded case of herpes in New York babies from a circumcision since 2000. Two of those infants died while two others suffered significant brain damage.
I'm confused about something. How does one recover from herpes? I thought that once you had it, you had it.
Well, that was my understanding.
Where's Barbie when we need her? She's the medical person.
Oh, okay. Hi, Barbie.
She's out there somewhere. If you know, call in, girlfriend.
663-HORN. 663-HORN. Operators are standing by. This is not a free call. but no, I mean, ugh. And see, this is, I mean, it's not everybody that does this. This is a little weirdo sect.
It's pretty sick.
And, yeah, Lottie in the chat room, herpes is for life.
Thank you. So I'm not crazy. Because, you know, that kid's going to get another outbreak at some point in his life. Or many times throughout his life.
Yeah, I mean, do you wear it like a badge of honor? I survived my bris? Or my... No, it's a T-shirt. My parents spent a fortune on my bris, and all I got was this lousy cold sore.
That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. All right, I can't take it anymore. Can I change the subject?
Absolutely. I'm X-ing out of the story. Goodbye, story.
Thank you. The one that caught my attention today was in the New York Times.
Yes.
An unarmed man is charged with wounding bystanders who were shot by the police near Times Square. Did you see that?
No, I've been on the road all day. You're going to have to help me through this.
Okay. An unarmed, emotionally disturbed man was shot at by police. He was kind of lurching around in traffic near Times Square in September. And he's been charged with assault on the theory that he was responsible for the bullet wounds suffered by the two bystanders, according to an indictment unsealed in the state Supreme Court in Manhattan on Wednesday. The guy's name is Glenn Broadnax. He's 35. He's from Brooklyn. He created a disturbance on September 14th by wading into traffic at 42nd Street and 8th Avenue, throwing himself into the path of oncoming cars. A curious crowd grew. Police officers arrived and tried to corral him. He's a big old boy, about 250 pounds, and when he reached into his pants pocket, well, you know what those officers automatically...
Oh, he was obviously going for a gun.
He's going for his gun! And they opened fire, and they missed, and they hit two women. And finally, a police sergeant knocked him down with a taser. So, the shooting...
So just to be clear, they went for the deadliest form of restraint first.
Well, because they automatically assumed that if you're not going for my gun, you must be going for your own. And... You know, it was just, well, it was just a year ago when the police shot nine bystanders in front of the Empire State Building when they killed an armed murder suspect. And, I mean, I will grant you that guy was armed, but still, you miss and you hit nine bystanders? So, initially, this guy...
Nine?
Yeah, nine. Are they, like, shitty shots or what?
They could have thrown their pistols at the guy and had more luck.
You'd think. But anyway, originally this guy was arrested on misdemeanor charges of menacing, drug possession, and resisting arrest, but the Manhattan District Attorney's Office persuaded a grand jury, and this is where I started choking, persuaded a grand jury to charge this gentleman with assault, a felony carrying a maximum sentence of 25 years. And specifically, the 9-count indictment unsealed on Wednesday said he recklessly engaged in conduct which created a grave risk of death. The defendant is the one who created the situation that injured the innocent bystanders. So the two police officers have been placed on administrative duties, and they're still under investigation, but... I mean, this is a guy who's mentally ill. He suffers from anxiety and depression. He was disoriented. He was scared when the police shot at him. He was reaching for his wallet. Like, we haven't heard that one before.
You know what the first thing that entered my mind out of this is, Carol?
What?
That DA has designs on the mayor's office.
Yeah, they usually have designs on higher political office, but... After he was arrested, he was taken to Bellevue, and we all know what Bellevue is. And he told a detective that he was talking to dead relatives in his head, and he tried throwing himself in front of cars to kill himself. So a judge ordered a mental evaluation, and a psychiatrist found that he was competent to stand trial, because they always are.
Yes.
And on Wednesday, a judge set bail at $100,000 bond. Or $50,000 cash, because most mentally ill people have that kind of coin laying around.
You're right.
But this one of the women who was wounded, her lawyer said the district attorney should be pursuing charges against the officers who fired their weapons recklessly into a crowd and not the mentally ill man. She said it's an incredibly unfortunate use of prosecutorial discretion to be prosecuting a man who didn't injure my client, wasn't armed, and it was the police who injured my client. So this is how they're kind of getting around, you know, shooting unarmed people. We just blame whoever pissed us off in the first place.
Well, there's that, but But the other thing that strikes me out of this is that this sort of puts paid to the notion that grand juries are independent acting, self-motivated, self-actualized, fully empowered bodies of American citizens who just do the right thing. This is the ham sandwich, Carol.
Yeah, my first response when I read that was, oh, shit. Sorry, cough. But it just, no way, no way. If they want an indictment, they'll get an indictment, which just goes to prove that Bob McCulloch was sitting at the defense table while he was, while his little minions were out there telling everybody that, you know, poor Darren Wilson, that poor big blah man scared him.
Yeah, that demon.
Yeah.
The demon.
With his head down, charging him like a football player.
Which, incidentally, of course, as we all know now, is a phrase that comes from somebody who was probably about as mentally grounded as the guy in New York City trying to throw himself into traffic.
Exactly. But he may face 25 years in prison while they found her quirky and charming.
And this is one of those moments when you wish that some really, really good hot shot makes DA's bowels turn to water lawyer. You know, like the defense lawyers who routinely beat the shit out of the guys on Law and Order. You know, there were entire blocks of seasons in that program where the DA couldn't get a conviction for love nor money.
Yeah.
I think it was back when the DA was half dead Fred Thompson. and Michael Moriarty was the. But anyway, you wish, because it ain't going to happen. Whoever defends this poor soul is going to be some overworked, underpaid legal aid lawyer or, you know, public defender.
Yeah.
Who has 700 other cases.
Although, I got to tell you, my darling sister sent me a YouTube movie not that long ago about a young man who was accused of committing a murder, and he got a public defender, and this public defender was tenacious and proved that he didn't do it and actually proved who did. And it is such a rare thing that that just popped into my mind that like 1 in 10,000 public defenders actually give a damn.
Well, most of them do, but it's in the nature.
Have the time to give a damn. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's in the nature of the system to make it. You know, because let's say here in almost level West Bicol, Virginia, we have a hybrid system. We have some public defenders, and we still have an appointment system, whereby the circuit judge will appoint private practicing attorneys to defend a case. You know, kind of the way Atticus got appointed to defend
Tom Robinson.
Tom Robinson in To Kill a Mockingbird. But even then, they can't get access to the money that they need, you know, for an investigator, forensics experts, that kind of thing. Can't get that kind of money. So, I mean, most public defenders really do care about their work, and a lot of them are really good trial lawyers. But, you know, when your case is one of 300, or even if it's one of 200, I mean, that's a hellacious caseload.
Well, and in Manhattan, you can imagine what the caseload looks like in the public defender's office in Manhattan, please.
Right, so you need a Melvin Belli or a Jerry Spence or, you know, one of those guys to come in, because this is crazy. I mean, this is the legal system absolutely turned upon its ear, because, you know, if you have your cup of coffee in law school, they'll teach you about things like causation, and then there's causation, and then there's causation, because there's superseding causes and intervening causes. I mean, it's possible, for instance, that our deeply disturbed individual could have run into traffic and could have been hit by a car and had his body flung by the car 10 feet and knocked down one of the women who got shot. And maybe she would have gotten a concussion. Okay? And he and at that point in time, you could have made a pretty convincing argument for some degree of criminal liability. Although it sounds a hell of a lot more like bad luck.
Yeah.
This doesn't even approach that. Because, I mean, this is contrary to all the stuff they teach you when you're having your cup of coffee. In criminal law, they teach you about mens rea, which is that mental state one has to form in order to perform a criminal act. Even if the mental state is just negligence, it doesn't sound like this guy could form the criminal intent to trespass.
And yet, miraculously, they found him competent to stand trial. I'm sure after they loaded him up with all the appropriate psychotropics to where he was, you know, could form a sentence.
Yeah. We just got a note in from Steve in China. Subject line, police blotter. 25 years? That'll teach his mentally disturbed ass not to lurch around in traffic when New York's finest are just trying to get in a little target practice on a crowded city street. God.
Sadly accurate.
And we did get a herpes update. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, you do have herpes forever. However, the virus hides in the nerve ganglia at the base of the spine. Such is true of all herpes viruses, including types 1 and 2 and zoster, which is where shingles come from. Right, right. And it just periodically flares up. But it's forever. No, I don't know. I see the moving hand of the ambitions of that district attorney. Because remember, there's going to be right now. Well, for instance, the nominee for attorney general was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Correct.
That's correct.
And there's another hot shot in there now. And the Southern District of New York U.S. attorneyship is a big deal. And our DA here may be thinking that's where he or she wants to go. I don't even know who the DA of New York is. At least it's not Fred Thompson. But and again, let's note these things don't just happen. A case like that doesn't get filed without somebody, you know, saying let's do that. The cops will love us for that.
Yeah.
Maybe they sprayed those bullets around so wildly because they were busy turning the backs. That seems to be what they're working most on these days.
Ugh, talk about the lynch mob.
You know what? That's what that union should be referred to forever after. The Policeman's Benevolent Association of the NYPD, the lynch mob.
Yep.
I mean, can you imagine, Carol, going to somebody's funeral and using it to make a filthy political statement?
God, it just...
When the mayor was invited by the grieving family of the officer.
And, you know, the mayor, all he said was, I have a black wife. I have a, from all visual context, a black son. And we've had that talk with him about how to approach police. He didn't say police were bad. He didn't say anything.
No.
Nothing of the sort. It was such intense overreaction and hyperbole and bomb throwing on the part of the police union, only the white police union, I might add.
And that's something that our buddy Brandon from Brooklyn pointed out over the weekend. All those cops with their backs turned on Mayor de Blasio. There weren't any melanin enhanced police turning their backs that Brandon was able to see.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe. And is that PBA, is that largely comprised of white NYPD officers?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because, I mean, there's multiple unions.
And believe it or not, the DA for Manhattan is Cyrus Vance Jr.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, yes. There's a name to trade on there.
Yeah. His daddy was the Secretary of State for Jimmy Carter.
Yep. Well, it's... Look, we live in a frightening country.
Yeah, we do.
You know, meanwhile, since we're at play in the fields of the law, I don't know if you saw this in the papers over the weekend. Two of the daughters of former Virginia Governor Robert F. McDonald, you know, the one who just got busted stone cold for being
Transvaginal Bob?
Yeah, Transvaginal Bob.
Yeah.
With his, you know, with his law degree there from Pat Robertson's School of Law.
Yeah.
Well, Janine McDonald Zubowski and Kaylin Young, who are his daughters, wrote letters to the judge in McDonald's sentencing asking him, pretty please, not to put their dear daddy away.
Because it was Mama's fault?
Because Mama is just a tramp and a whore who is transfixed by shiny, expensive things.
Ooh, Mother's Day is going to be interesting in the McDonald household, isn't
it? Don't you know? Here, Mama, drink this. It smells yeah. like... Why, darling, it smells like almonds. It's supposed to, Mama. Yeah. Good God. The privilege on display here. My mom... This is the quote, Carol. You might want to... Hockey puck, you know. My mom has always been concerned about getting discounts or freebies. She hid her coordination with people for free or discounted things or services, and she didn't communicate with my dad because she knew he would not approve. The testimony about my mom was not just part of a defense strategy and was not an attempt to throw her under the bus, but unfortunately was the reality.
I find it very interesting, though, that the bus driver looked remarkably like her soon-to-be ex-husband.
Alice, one of these days.
Exactly.
Bus drivers, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
The Bob McDonald I witnessed countless times, time and time again, was a man of great compassion who could relate as comfortably with a tatted-up prisoner, welfare mother, or child in need of adoption as with a member of the General Assembly or a dignitary. That's Martin D. Brown, former advisor to the governor on prisoner reentry issues. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lord.
I wonder how was he exhibiting that compassion with the welfare mother back when he was trying to get a transvaginal ultrasound crammed up her hoo-ha?
Well, you know, Jesus. I've still been looking for the references to transvaginal probes in the Bible, but even in the Republican Bible, I can't find one. But I know it's there. I know it's there.
It's probably hidden in some very symbolic language. And then Adam knew Eve with his train. Right, yeah. Yeah.
First Virginia, chapter 12.
Exactly.
Verse 26.
Yep. Second Virginia, 469.
You're going to hell for that.
Well, I know. And in fact, I had a fundy in my face over the weekend trying to tell me about hell and believing, and I just, it always stops him cold, Carol, when you look at him and go, are you going to heaven? Well, yes, I do believe so. I try to live in the grace of Jesus Christ. I said, well, then hell's looking a lot better to me. I don't want to go to heaven with you.
Ugh.
Yeah. And by the way, Ron and Raleigh points out, Carol, that down in Texas, our mentally disturbed individual from New York could have been wearing a purple cowboy outfit and been found competent to stand trial.
He's got me there.
Yeah, because that's true. 100%. Yes.
That story just made me insane. I shouldn't say that.
Now, here's a question coming in from Roger in the chat room. And I've been thinking about this weekend, since we're working in metaphors and analogies.
Yeah.
If the President of the United States went to a military base and delivered an address to the troops,
yeah,
and the troops turned their back on him, would they be subject to disciplinary action?
I would hope.
You know, something like maybe insubordination.
You know, there's that whole chain of command thing, and with him being the, you know, commander-in-chief.
Right, and is not the mayor of a city, is not the mayor of New York ultimately in charge of the New York Police Department?
He absolutely is.
Then every one of those people who turned their backs, were they not engaged in an act of rather overt insubordination?
Yeah.
Because all I heard on the for-profit media was that, if he tries to take action against them, obviously he'll be violating their free speech rights to political speech under the First Amendment.
When you're in uniform and you're officially on the job, and there are limits to your free speech, what you do on the job and how it reflects upon your employer. And your employer is the city of New York. And every New Yorker that I talked to was humiliated by that whole toxic display of New York's feckless. I mean, finest.
No, I think you were right the first time.
I know I was.
No, but I mean, I guess it would be buying a whole boatload of litigation, or maybe the rest of the NYPD, some portion of the NYPD PBA members would hold their breath until their faces turned as blue as their uniforms. But I'm stymied to figure out how it is that a right did not inure to fire every last one of those police officers who turned their backs.
Well, here's my question. Would it have killed them to turn their back on Eric Garner?
Well, see, if you do that, you know, freedom, the flag is falling.
Oh, the terrorists win, I forgot.
Yeah, right, right. And we can't fly to Disney World anymore. on an Asia airplane being driven into the ocean by the metric system.
Yikes. Well, listen, it's almost the top of the hour, and I want to make room for other people, but our friend Aaron Nanasty,
mm-hmm,
who did the magnificent...
Oh, she does a truly wonderful eggnogged-up half-term governor.
She really does. And Aaron has, throughout, you know, this time written the Bachman Diaries, which are just hysterical pieces of work. And with Michelle leaving, Aaron's regular blog is called Poking at Snakes.
Yes.
And I will leave a link to it on the Horn page. And it's a farewell Michelle piece.
I saw that.
And it was so... It was so good.
I was rendered helpless.
It always is when she's involved. But I wanted to ask folks to, if you really want to read something entertaining, it's Aaron Nanasty, Poking at Snakes, Farewell Michelle.
Yay. I'll be there.
So
I mean, I've already been there. But.
Yeah. So it's worth reading. And she's just incredible. And we need more voices like hers out there.
Oh, yes, we do. And, Aaron is welcome to exercise that voice here on any old time she feels like it.
I got to get her pretty drunked up first, but it's always worth it.
So what, do you ship the eggnog?
Yeah, but she sends cookies back. So I told her flat, I would whore myself up for her baked goods and a New York Minute.
I don't doubt it in the least. And that reminds me, for anybody who would like to jump in there, because we got about $95 to go in fundraising this evening, and thank you personally. Thank you very kindly, Carol. It is much
obliged. Well, you're welcome. I made an extra $25 today doing a little side job, and I gave it all to the horn.
Bless your heart. It there is much appreciated as we come down toward the end of December. But you also have a Hooterville Holler Ozark Mountain gift basket remaining on the table, do you not?
I absolutely do. And for those who are unaware, it always comes with, well, and actually I've been able to modify it for people's dietary needs. It usually comes with a beef stick, and you can either get a regular summer sausage, beef summer sausage, or I can send the jalapeno summer sausage.
Which is really good.
Which is really good. Mild cheese or a spicy cheese. The last ones I sent out were a tomato basil chipotle.
Oh, stop it.
And they were, from all accounts, very good. Rob in Iowa.
Yes.
Sent a very nice thank you for that one. I always send elderberry jam and try to toss in. I have absolutely cleared my pantry out of all of the peach jam. It's all gone. But I can get you homemade noodles. I can get you garlic mustard. They have all kinds of wonderful homemade goodies there. And if you actually go to the Osceola Cheese website, you can almost pick out what you want, and I will get it for you and send it on its way.
Well, so, I can personally vouch for how yummy they are. So can Boss Man Wayne. you mentioned Rob in Iowa. So that would take us to only $25 to go with this evening's fundraising if somebody wants to jump in and get the It's like News Ninja Carol Baker is your personal shopper there in the Hooterville Holler there.
And darling, I know food.
Yeah, there where the ducks aren't geese, and the geese aren't ducks, and the only person that doesn't know that is me.
I did not even make fun of you over that.
No, you didn't, and it's terrible when I'm left to have to do it myself.
You figured it out on your own that those were just really big ducks.
It's a giant rabbit. Yeah, exactly.
But last night there was like this most amazing sunset, so I decided not to take the shot from the porch. I went out onto the dock over the water, and it was like one of those deep blood red sunsets, and all of a sudden this flock of geese came flying right at me, and Cat Stevens is on my head, you know.
Well, those little suckers can be mean.
And he is like, that cat's going crazy, but they were coming right at me. And I took the shot when they were just over the tree line, and you could see the perfect reflection of them on the water. It was just kind of one of those once in a lifetimes.
Well, you sure do get some beautiful sunsets there at Lake Hooterville.
Yeah, there has to be a plus side for living here.
Oh, by the way, before you do go, though, and we'll clear room for somebody else. Remember the other night when we were having the caramel apple listeria discussion?
What? Yes.
I got some terrible news last night. A friend of mine with whom I went to college back in Missouri just passed away there in Kansas City.
Really?
Of a brain infection.
And don't tell me.
I don't know. But it immediately set me in mind, just, you know, people need to be reminded. Of course, I mean, there's other things that lead to brain infections, but my God.
Did they ever determine, was it the caramel or was it the apples?
I read again on it last night, and that detail was not there. I would think it would almost have to be the apple, though, Carol, because the caramel has to be hot in order to be liquid enough to dip the apple in it.
I know, but it's got butter and sugar, and it can go bad. Caramel can go bad.
Well, yeah, it can. And apparently the ones with the sprinkles, maybe it was the sprinkles.
Ugh.
But it just reminded me that because that is still ongoing.
Wow. I promise there will be no caramel apples.
Okay. I wasn't suggesting that you needed to do that, but yeah.
Unless, of course, Lindsey Graham asks for one.
Carol, dear, would you bring me one of those delightful Missouri caramel apples? I swear, I think my blood sugar is falling down.
What? Did you say it smells like almonds, Lindsey? Don't worry, it's supposed to.
Oh, you are delightful, and as witty and sharp as ever.
You're a sick puppy if you think so.
Well, no, I do, and you know, I noticed you picked up the ball and started running with, you know, back when North Korea called the president a monkey.
Oh, yes. Did you know that Kim Jong-un became the instant front runner for the Republican presidential candidacy? He shot ahead of Jeb when he called Obama a monkey.
I think he's gonna keynote CPAC this spring or something, isn't he?
Well, I don't know, but I think their dream ticket is Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un, because those are real leaders.
Yeah, and they've got the same kind of economic miracles that the Republicans would like for us to have.
Yes, magic thinking. They're special.
Oh, they are indeed. Carol Baker, thank you very kindly. It was a lovely conversation.
Well, you're welcome, darling. Talk to you soon. And people, write your checks, make your contributions. Let's get through this year, and we'll work on next year.
One day at a time. It's the only way we can play it.
I know, that whole one foot in front of the other thing. It's what we all do.
Exactly. The pratfall of 1,000 miles begins with, you know, one misstep.
I know, but you keep picking me up.
You have a good night, and tell Aaron hi. And yeah, everybody go see. You're gonna weep with your. Yeah, you'll be wrecked by this column.
She's good.
She's very good. All right, see you, Carol.
Bye, doll.
Bye now. News Ninja Carol Baker. Calling from Hooterville. Well, hey, look, there goes the phone ringing. And I have a sneaking suspicion this is Bill. Is that Bill?
Yes, sir. Who else would it be? Well, I would give you terribly tough acts to follow here, you know. It's Carol is so much on the money, you know, when she...
Well, that's why you always bring the music act on after the comedian.
Let me turn my speakers down here on the computer. You're coming too loud and clear. Would you work on something this weekend or what?
Oh, no. Things seem to be behaving.
What's your weather like down there?
Kind of gray and squishy and, you know, high 30s, low 40s. We were supposed to at least maybe get a flake or two of snow. Never saw the first one on Christmas.
Well, it's been pretty quiet snow-wise. I mean, the worst I ever saw was around Thanksgiving in 1950, where we got 20-some inches and 24 inches in 24 hours. That was a nasty snow. National Guard tanks were dragging sleds full of milk to the store, you know? Because that was a... And the car situation in the States was so different then. Two-car families?
Yeah, didn't it?
Yeah. Four family bank accounts, maybe, you know.
Right, or, you know, that was the Rockefellers.
Yeah, well, I'm not far from where his estate was. In fact, they built a railroad station. I think I probably told you this too many times. They built a railroad station so he could get off the train and get into a buggy. It was horse and buggy first, and then it was automobile and go right up to his... His estate was called Forest Hills in Cleveland, and it's still around. And there's Forest Hills Park now. The interesting thing about the park is coyotes are showing up all over. What is with the coyote, the return of the coyote to urban living?
It's a process of mismanagement and the fact that coyotes can interbreed with dogs. And we have, yeah, you know, we have a horrible problem with people not spaying and neutering their pets, and they get loose and they'll, you know, and the thing is, when a coyote breeds with a dog, you don't get a dog with coyote tendencies. You get a coyote that looks like just, you know, a stray dog.
Yeah. Oh boy, I got a dog that I could never identify. He was brindle, and he was bigger, much taller than a, pit bull. I don't know what the hell it was. A brindle dog like that. I mean, I've never seen a friend of mine has a dog that has the head of a Rottweiler. And that's a hell of a nice dog, too. But, of course, don't ever antagonize them, you know? But I ended up moving. At one point, I had six dogs. Well, I couldn't. Every time I turned around, there was a hungry stray, and I'm feeding them. And of course, I wasn't taking care of kids. So my vet bill was still a lot steeper than it would have been to raise six kids. How many did you raise, four?
Still in the process of, yes.
Yeah. Well, your son was delightful the other night. He's a guy that I literally talk to and say, hey, pick up, go to the library. Well, I don't know how the libraries are down there as far as recordings.
Not so much.
No.
But, you know, there's a lot that you can do now with things like Amazon Prime. I mean, there's a lot of music you can just listen to now. Amazon Prime Music, they've just made stuff available.
Well, you start talking about Korea, and I have a background in that. I was 7 years old when that war broke out, and I was already reading at a sixth grade level, so I read everything I could, and the news was, you know, no videotape. All that stuff came in from overseas a day after it happened, you know. And the Americans took a butt-whipping in the beginning of that war because those men had been part of the 8th Army, which had been one of MacArthur's armies. Those were the guys that took a big part in the early occupation of the Philippines. How many people died during that thing? Well, they could have probably cut the, what MacArthur did that was of value was he would use the Navy to isolate these islands, and the Japanese couldn't get food and munitions in, so they just let them sit there.
Yeah.
They couldn't get out, couldn't do anything. That was I'll give them credit, that was a good idea. Just let them sit. But, when that Korean thing started, the American 8th Army, can you imagine being on occupation duty in Japan after the war on an American soldier's pay? Pretty good living. And the place was too small to have different training exercises and such, so the guys had a good time, and then all of a sudden they're laying in a rice paddy in Korea, and the Koreans use human waste products for fertilizer in those days, as did a lot of people, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not picking up Korea, because that was just you worked with what you had, you know, that's how life was. It's the old joke about how did you get corn down from the hills in West Virginia?
You plant in the lowlands.
Oh, okay, because I thought maybe you got it down one jug at a time.
Yeah.
Terrible. Isn't that terrible?
Oh, no. I walked right into it. I think that's the way it's supposed to be, Bill.
Yeah. Well, that was so much of that. The stock car racing, some of the stories I've heard, a lot of the guys were runners, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
around, and because you know, didn't you guys have a real problem down there? The Sunday law against liquor sales.
Oh, at least in this state, you still cannot buy. Now you can buy beer and wine after 1 p.m. on Sunday.
Okay. Yeah.
In West Virginia, but you cannot buy liquor at all on Sunday. So you have to be like the children of Israel with the manna on the Sabbath, and you have to gather extra before it comes, or else you know, you'll die of thirst.
Well, I've got to get myself a bottle of Kahlua. I love that stuff. You ever had that stuff?
No, what?
Kahlua.
Oh, Kahlua. Yeah, I don't so much go in for it. Just I'm not a big liqueur guy anyway.
I'll tell you what, get some vanilla ice cream and pour Kahlua on it.
Oh, well, oh, my God, yeah, sure. That would be easy.
And it also goes down well with coffee.
Yeah, who put the coffee in my coffee?
Yeah, exactly. But let's say this current leader in North Korea, I just wonder, how long are the Chinese going to sit still for this guy? This whole country, how...
Well, China can tolerate a lot because, among other things, as small as it is, South Korea is a serious competitor against Chinese industrial output. So North Korea, you know, you have to tolerate some silliness and the occasional nuclear test explosion. But for the most part, they keep the South from being completely at peace and being able to turn all their thoughts toward industrial production.
Yeah.
And if the North Korean government were to collapse and the South Korean government were to be able to develop the North, that's sitting right there on the Chinese border and all of that taken together could be a real economic threat to China. So they'll put up with a good bit.
Well, you just hit it on the head. When the United Nations crossed the 38th parallel to finish the North Korean government, and they got up close to that Yalu River, and the Chinese moved some like 600,000 men in there. And, Bob, they did such a job on it that the UN air observers couldn't pick it up. The Chinese were masters of camouflage. That had been a real conflagration between the Chiang Kai-shek men would surrender at the drop of a hat because they didn't really have much belief in the guy. He was corrupt as hell. And it was just, you know, I've never been able to find anything good on the Chinese Civil War that gave you some concept of... But what it was nationalist armies were surrendering in large numbers and turning over all these tons of weapons that we had given Chiang Kai-shek. Oh, it was a mess. And the Chinese soldiers in Korea, they ran the UN back south of the 38th.
Bill? Wait a minute. Hang on. Apparently, hang on, Bill, hang on.
Yeah.
Stand by a minute. I don't know why the gizmo just dropped, but it did. We'll be back with you in a second, Bill.
I can let go, Bob. I just wanted to touch base with him. If I hear the name Johnny Manziel one more time, I'm going to lose my lunch.
Well, at least the season's over, so maybe you don't have to till next season.
Oh, they're still talking about it. And management seems to want to keep it.
I tell you what, you would have enjoyed, well, not enjoyed, but, you know, of course, Johnny Manziel came from Texas A&M. And my beloved Mountaineers played very poorly against Texas A&M in the Liberty Bowl today. And in the first half, there were two separate occurrences that were caught on film, or not film, but caught photographically and put out on social media. They had a graduate assistant who twice, when a Mountaineer running back ran into the Texas A&M sideline, sucker punched the player.
Oh, for God's sake.
No flag.
I know the Red Wings, the Lions just had a guy who couldn't play yesterday for walking over, or can't play next week because he walked over the quarterback's leg.
Yeah, he stepped on Aaron Rodgers twice within a couple of seconds, and he's got a history of doing it, and that's Ndamukong Suh.
Ndamukong Suh, yeah. Well, that's another thing. People don't realize how many gangs there are on the west coast of Samoans.
Well, Ndamukong Suh is African.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
I thought for sure he was Samoan because there's a lot of guys playing the game that are, you know.
Yeah. But no, he is from one of the African countries. I'm not sure which. I could probably look it up pretty quick. But yeah, he's been suspended for next week's playoff game. And you know, Detroit looked terrible yesterday for the most part against Green Bay.
Yeah.
And that is just so cheap. I guess cheap shots used to be a much bigger part of the game.
Yep. Well, in the 1950s, you know, between 50 and 55, only three cities played for the NFL championship. It was consistently Paul Brown's Cleveland Browns, and the other two teams were the Los Angeles Rams, who had left Cleveland at the end of the 45 season. They were league champions, and they went to L.A., because Brown was bringing a team into the All-America Conference, and Paul was a big hero in Ohio. He coached Ohio State, and he coached Massillon High School, which was a football factory, you know. So they got out. The other team was Detroit Lions, which those guys had Paul's number. They beat him at least three times, in fact, including 1957, Paul got back into the title again in the Eastern Division because he had drafted a young man named Jim Brown.
Oh, by the way, I was utterly wrong. Ndamukong Suh was actually born in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
But his heritage, goes back to Africa. No, he went to high school. Born in Portland, Oregon, went to high school there. Was an All-American at Nebraska, I think. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's another Well, the Big Ten has changed a lot in my lifetime. They're
going to
have a new coach in Michigan.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. His mother is Jamaican, and his father is from Cameroon.
That was French, I believe.
Yeah, it was.
Colonial heritage. Yeah, I knew a French.
But he's earned himself a rather significant reputation for being playing dirty.
Well, the French in Indochina, the Guinean Fu, the Algerians, the Senegalese, and the Moroccans were in. But of course, the Foreign Legion at that time, you know what they were, don't you?
Yeah.
Shellers, man. Shell, make fast. I think that's what that translates to.
The French Foreign Legion would take just about anybody from anywhere.
Yep. Well, and after the war, I think these guys. Hell, there were six guys that were Spanish who had fought against Franco in the Chinese Civil War, Spanish Civil War, and they didn't know what else to do with themselves, so they joined the Legion right after they escaped from Franco, and they were still with him in 1950s. It's when these guys learn how to do it, it's what they do, you know? Anyway, let me put it on line for somebody else, and a couple more days, about Thursday morning and 1 second after midnight, which...
Your birthday.
Was a thank you. Yeah, I expect Latin American vegetation is always appreciated. Anyway,
You take care, Bill. We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, legendary bluesman from Cleveland. And, yes, his birthday is New Year's Day. He was, it was the first of a series of firsts for Bill. He was the first baby born in Cleveland that particular year. So do let's remember to wish Bill a very, very happy birthday on the New Year's Eve program. And by the way, I thought I'd put out a little something for a little consideration. Do you guys want to do a front porch on New Year's Eve? We're not going to go overtime or anything, but we'll just go from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern time, of course. But I thought that we might do a front porch if y'all are into it for Wednesday, and then do a front porch on Friday as well. Let's see who we've got on the line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark calling from.
Hey, Mark, what's happening?
Hey, Bob, I heard your Merry Christmas, by the way. I heard your question about active duty armed forces in uniform and a commanding officer, and for civilians that don't realize that your commanding officer is. Only applies to people in uniform. I'm not even sure, but I guess it might apply to veterans, whatever the case. But commanding officer is somebody in charge of the American military, and really has no influence over the civilian population. I think legally speaking, when it comes to standing in detention or other things, probably more serious nature. But yes, that would be considered. Insubordination, and any Marine Corps officers that allowed themselves or into the Marines to do that would be immediately fired on the spot.
That is in large part because the Uniform Code of Military Justice is in play, right?
That's what they would, you and I or you and your audience, and there's been discussion about Oath Keepers and these minor movements of insurrectionist leaning movements and all the contemporary things that have been going on. I'll just make another observation that if you scrolling around on Facebook here over the last. Few minutes, and it's a friend of mine that I've met through Facebook who's a former, I think she's retired U.S. State Department. We just have so much in common with our views and our experiences and our respect for values of similar nature. Always to your own and all the other, the Hawaiian listeners in general, from pollution to civil rights to our, the direction we were all going at one point as citizens. Now it seems to be we're tugging in two different directions. And but the thing that's on Facebook that I've seen probably eight times now so far is when President Obama was at Kaneohe, and there was some young couple getting married at the Kaneohe Marine Corps Air Station Golf Course, of which I used to, ride my bicycle, and I'd have my wife drop me off with a pickup truck there, and she'd take the truck back to the house, and I spent a lot of time on that golf course. It's a beautiful golf course. The story of the Marines on Hawaii goes back to the mid-30s, I guess, or early 30s. And there's a contingent of all branches of the armed forces that got there. But unbeknownst to the other people in the entourage, the Marines had done what they normally always do, is they conducted pre-reconnaissance of an area, I don't know, months or days or whenever it was in advance. And they came back and they put on their humble pie faces, and they let all the high powerful brass decide who was going where. And then the Marines said, okay, well, then they just kind of said, I guess we'll take that side of the island. They kind of waved it off, but they ended up getting the prettiest part of Hawaii. And, the poor, Army and Navy, Pearl Harbor's pretty, but it's congested now. And, it's pretty to look at from, you know, just driving through there. And then, but kind of only the water on the, where the U.S. Army is, the Schofield Barracks, is so unattractive up there, and seems to be a place where it's kind of like what Florida be, West Coast compared to East Coast, where you get current versus no current, and you get the mosquitoes. But actually, I don't think there's a lot of mosquitoes in Hawaii, even though I lived there for 3 years. Nor snakes, by the way. I don't think I remember getting bit by either one much. But the point I'm trying to make is I read the story. I didn't want to. I thought, well, in order to beat up on right-wingers, sometimes I have to know a little more detail than they know, and they don't seem to really pay attention to tiny details. So what I read was they were two U.S. Army officers getting married, and immediately in my mind, those were alarm bells. So here, they were both alarm bells. It was U.S. Army getting married on a Marine Corps air station. It's beautiful over there, like I said. That would make sense. And that golf course is right on the ocean. It's out of the movies pretty, but on the other hand, I didn't know of anybody from any other branch of the service coming our way. Only other than naval officers could do something of that. And those aren't Army officers. That part could make a little bit of tiny truth, but I just found it interesting that the president, being a Hawaiian American, spends a lot of time, it seems, around Christmas going back to Hawaii. So it seems to me that they may have been laying in wait. Those people may have been legitimately getting married, but how interesting it would be to know what their political leanings are. And nor do I really personally care, but really the most significant part of all of this bullshit and propaganda is the fact that President Obama got very little play on national news, but they did show him speaking to the Marines at Kaneohe, and he does that on purpose. Marines are the first people to deploy to any conflict of any significance. They're there before the rest of the Marines get there. There are contingent submarines that go in and do reconnaissance. Always have. And then they'll take in some Army delegates as well, but mostly they're doing a lot of the snooping and pooping. But what was so significant, and then this whole thing is very classic Republican behavior, it's a disinformation tactic, because what did the president announce that the Afghanistan war is now officially over? That, you know, all hostilities from our part were going to end because we're bringing home our ground aggressive people. So,
well, except for the fact that we're going to have 13,000 people there for the foreseeable future.
And, you know, and actually, Bob, 13,000 people is, I think that's a couple of battalions, so that's rather significant. You know, 30,000.
Well, yeah, and I'd say it's, yeah, and I'm not being a smartass here, Mark. I'd say it's going to be significant to the 13,000 mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts, uncles, best friends, next door neighbors, sons and daughters, and grandsons and granddaughters.
And speaking of which, not to get personal, which you had mentioned it over there, is the son still leaning towards the armed forces?
No, I think no, not at present.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like a wise choice right now.
Well, you know, he seems so gifted. He seems like he could go in so many different directions with so much stuff. And there's so many things that smart minds could attach themselves to from a futuristic standpoint. I do a lot of fighting for the high-speed rail on Facebook, United States highspeedrail.com, USHSCI, whatever those would be, .com. That's a million jobs. Obviously, clean energy. There's so many. His knees. I mean, there are so many contributing factors. But you know, I know he seems to have gravitated towards his interest with the reconnaissance, and those are usually your best and brightest. And actually, recon Marines are they're talented people, and they're very
clear-minded.
And I had respect for them. I know that when they get well to hurt, or same with today's modern Navy SEALs, which I know Bill was just on the line, he's probably still listening, that today's modern Navy SEALs really contract themselves back to American Marines from the Vietnam War, who were dissatisfied with the civilian world and found themselves in the ranks of the Navy creating the modern SEALs. They went directly back in pursuing the SEAL program. And even Red Cell founder Victor Marchenko, if anybody's read his autobiography, talks about having wanted to have been a Marine. It's an intimidation factor for all of us, for any of us. But the thing is, Marchenko was a good man, a good-hearted, brave man, and I believe he's still alive. But his executors of his will and policies and their tactics were very Marine-esque. And I, on a personal note, had just a tiny brush with Red Cell, coincidentally, when I was in Hawaii, when I had attached myself to a Marine Corps counterintelligence unit. I spent on a three-year tour, about 18 months with combat engineers. I kind of got bored with that. I worked on the flight line on one half of that, of the 18 months, and the other half was with the infantry side of the combat engineer. And I thought, well, let's see what else there is. And I said, why is this door always closed? And why aren't the windows open? And what is this? And who are they? And so I knocked on the door. I actually pushed the buzzer, and they let me in. And I had to write a paper after initial interview. They said, pick a topic here and write what you think you believe in one of these topics. So I chose Central America. And I don't know if I'd mentioned it to you before. I think I might have, that I had to write I didn't have to, but I chose to write about Central America because I was very comfortable with the subject. I knew that anybody I was speaking with couldn't have known any more about Central America at the time than I had. I was very tuned into it. And actually, Mark Rosenberg, who was the dean of academia for the state of Florida, actually was pulled before Congress back during the Iran-Contra. Mark Rosenberg, to give testimony, he's considered a Central American studies expert, and he gave his knowledge. He done a lot of time in Nicaragua, and I met Rosenberg through Florida International University just as a benign student, fresh out of the course, stumbling through the school, wanting to get education, but having to continue to go to work. But I realized I could still be myself and have my personal values when I met somebody of dignity and integrity. And then my heart was able to be expressed like it's continued to have been, but I guess the point is I felt bad that I had written, how that I thought that the peace accords that the Costa Rican leader, I pulled together for Central America would fail. And I knew that if I worded my biopsy in an aggressive fashion, that I'd be attracted to the Marines, by the way.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, let me back up with you for a minute, Mark, because I know you do have some expertise. So we've established it would be a pretty clear case of insubordination where were members of the military in uniform to turn their backs on the President of the United States as an act of political protest.
Mm-hmm.
Does the same thing obtain with law enforcement in uniform?
I was also a Miami cop, and I actually work with the Miami Riverboat Murderers. I fresh out of Central and South America, and because I did not get my college paid for, I missed the GI Bill by a month. 30 days made a difference. So, in any case, so I said, well, I got to go to work. And so I ended up going to Miami, and I joined the City Miami Police, and I saw a lot in a short period of time. And it's ironic that you asked that question, because I was not necessarily a big supporter of his. I was actually a Jenny Carter Democrat as a veteran and shop embassy duty, who I had actually voted and argued for President Carter while on embassy duty, and new Marines that actually had served security on details with Carter when he would come around the world, and embassy Marines would run with him as added security with Secret Service. And so I found that kind of exciting. So here I am back in Miami, and actually one evening I'm riding in Little Havana at three in the morning, I think it must have been, and I see a white guy in Little Havana, and my partner's a Puerto Rican Army veteran, very squared away, very, very significant on the streets, and it's probably the best cop that I met tactically awareness-wise. And so I said, Carlos, did you see that dude? And he goes, no, I didn't. I said, Carlos, there's a white guy in a three-piece suit back there. And he goes, come on. I said, I'm not bullshitting. We got to go back. So all the streets in downtown Little Havana are all one way or the other. So we loop around. Of course, you can do what you want. You're in a squad car. We loop back over there. Long story short, he was a Secret Service agent, field supervisor, and he said, are you going to 361? We said, and my partner, Carlos, was so streetwise. He said, let me see your credentials. So he put, you know, he made him show his ID to the street cop. And actually what it boiled down to is there was a threat on Vice President Bush's life. And we saw that as just a job and an obligation. And, of course, there weren't some political things going on, like we painted them up to be. I don't know that there would be, you know, I think cops are considered, you know, freestanding citizens. But the way I interpret it as an American, a freestanding American, and always have been in or out of any uniform, is that I find it a slight towards democracy. Because if we don't exist in a cooperative fashion, just like the lady caller you had before, so hilarious and so smart and so funny, and if we turn our back on a democratically elected leader, what's the difference between that and Egypt
I think you've drilled right down to it, Mark. The fact of the matter is even if it's not punishable, it is an act of profound insubordination. And it is, in fact, an act of objection to civilian control of the elements of deadly force in our country, whether they be military or police.
I'd say at minimum, Bob, because if you just look at, you know, he won, you know, regardless of the election percentages, but he was elected at 73% in Leota. At you know, 24%. I mean, has a wide margin of victory. It seems to be, you know, just from an outsider standpoint, it seems to be a much ado about nothing but intentional provocation. And if you look at some of the key players, they're strong associates with the 9/11 people, with the Giulianis and things. You know, very very Bush strong people. So it's like, you know, here's a city of 8 million people that has to operate in a cooperative fashion. They've had an election. So basically, if the police are turning their back on the will of the people, I believe that's a statement towards fascism, is what Mark would say. I'd say it's a strike against democracy. And if those jackass punks want to play that game, then I'm still healthy enough to swing a baseball bat or do more. And so if they want to turn this country into a true eviction of peacefulness, they must realize there are many people of a healthy enough nature to push back would be my reality. And so a punk in a uniform, it didn't intimidate me when I was in the damn uniform. As a matter of fact, I went up against racism as a cop in a uniform towards cops. And I did it successfully, but I also did it to the point where I knew that if I pushed it much further, I could get myself killed. But I fought for my values that I've espoused on the radio station in and out of goddamn uniform. So, you know, Buffalo soldiers come at all stripes. And if there's anybody that has a friend that's a policeman, they better realize that the cops work for Americans. Americans are not employees of any police department. Cops work for Americans. Americans don't work for the cops. We don't work for fucking Wall Street. We work for each other. We work for our country as a people, as a cooperative, peaceful, multiracial nation heading in a positive fashion. A direction, excuse me. So to bow down to fascism would be a deadly mistake. And that's how it strikes me as a citizen. And for you to let me say that on your radio station means a lot to me, because I know that we have a lot in common. But I have much respect for you, Bob, and I know you're more of a person who opposes violence that I may be prepared to do. But I fight for peace, and if I have to be strong about those values, I will. And whereas I'll respect your ultimate ability to have more discipline than me, but I'm bright enough to even know that. I know that difference between the two of us, and I respect it. But I've been programmed not to be as civilized as you, and I have to say that I don't know that I'll ever get there. But
I scrape up what civilization I can find for 3 hours a night. The other 20, the other 21 hours, all bets are off.
Yeah. Well, you didn't want to go to heaven with that guy going to hell, so I understand what you're saying. But you know, I just think that it's a very serious comment. And in other words, you know, if you just look at global history, if you know, here we are, we watched what happened in Egypt, and finally, when the sun came up the next day after the very violent evening, and the sun came up the next day, and the cops caught themselves acting crazy. Even they backed off. And that's
you know, Mark, Charlie Pierce pointed it out, so I have to give credit where credit is due. The fact of the matter is, we're seeing with the revelations about torture, and with acts like the police did at this funeral, we're seeing. These are overt acts by people with a hell of a lot of power that demonstrate that there is a significant element inside the polis, the P-O-L-I-S polis, that is the United States of America, a decided taste, if you will, for military authoritarianism.
That's correct. I agree.
I mean, we're coming up on the end of the year. And how many other stories have already supplanted torture? The New York Times, and this still, I mean, granted, I couldn't read it without hearing, you know, Judith Miller, in the back of, like a drumbeat in the back of my head. But the New York Times authored an editorial calling for the investigation and prosecution of people all the way up to Dick Cheney for this torture. And they did so, I think, the editorial board of the New York Times, knowing goddamn full and well that ain't nothing going to happen. Because, see, every president that gets in there knows that someday it might be committed on his or her watch, and therefore don't prosecute the people who came before. And it's also, and this is not a justification, but in terms of ancient history, the tendency to prosecute previous office holders is a big part of what led to the ultimate collapse of the Republican structure of ancient Rome and the Democratic structure of ancient Greece. So maybe American presidents look at it that way. But still, the fact that the New York Times called for it, and how many other newspapers in the United States picked up that call? How many other newspapers said, yeah, we agree? Did the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the Nashville Tennessean, the New Orleans Times-Picayune, the L.A. Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Charlotte Observer, did any of those pick it up and say, we agree?
You know, I can't say that I was aware that the New York Times had made that stance, Bob. And I'd also like to thank you, as a veteran that kind of keeps his eye on things, thank you for your observation that you just made concerning not the torture. I just want to say about the female writer. What did you say her name is, Bob? The lady that was given the article.
Judith Miller.
Yeah, Judith Miller, Michelle Malkin, and even Charles Krautheimer. Now Krautheimer's in a wheelchair and a Zionist with Project for New American Century. And Judith Miller, a woman, defending torture, I presume, and then Michelle Malkin, a Vietnamese, and not Vietnamese, but excuse me, Asian American. These people have their views, but have been placed in these positions to espouse them specifically because of who they are as what they are. And now that sounds chauvinistic, but that's actually marketing. Now you take a 40-year-old Asian female or younger, slightly attractive, and espouse right-wing, you know, warmongering views, that appeals directly to the 60-year-old white guy.
And I understand we kind of tread a fine line on this, and I don't want to cross it, But the reason that so many vicious, malicious, hateful, ugly right-wing talking points are advanced on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda by a smiling, leggy blonde is precisely because they know that the messenger... You remember decades ago when Marshall McLuhan said the medium is the message?
I think that does sound familiar. I didn't know the man's name.
Well, that notion has been advanced by Rupert Murdoch to the messenger is the message. You know, if a smiling, beautiful, curvaceous, leggy fox blonde in a really short dress says that America needs to torture people, well, it is that much more likely because she's saying it that Emery sitting there in the Barca lounger will kind of glance over at Marmalade, make sure she's not looking at him. He'll kind of adjust a little bit there in the Barca lounger and say, "God damn right, we need to torture."
And then Mama can't say, "Honey, calm down." That way they can both say, "Well, he might be right because that lady's right. I mean, that lady's right because he says she's right." And that's how it's
and it turns into turns into a feedback loop. Sure, absolutely.
Certainly, it's a feedback loop, and it's sad that we Americans are many Americans can't be analytical enough to see that they're being sold something by the salesman that's been selected to sell it to them. And then, of course, even the Iraq War was marketed through some groups in New York, some of the best marketing groups that they have. And all those fake generals and colonels that were on CNN this time, I said, hell, I don't recognize that guy. I don't remember this dude. I mean, I knew all these active duty guys. I actually kind of served under some of them. I go, I don't even see any of these people I used to know. And then, of course, I had pulled another decade out of my life, but in the meantime, but I didn't remember even any some of the subordinate names, but they'd all been, you know, bought out by Lockheed Martin or whoever to conduct their, not that they weren't real officers, but they, as soon as they retire, of course, that's what they're going to, but you know, you can't get the big toothless, guy from, you know, wherever to, you know, say, you know, kill all these people because, you know, of course, that would appear to be what it exactly is. I have a friend, Bob, that I've also met, through Facebook. I don't think you'd mind if I mention his name, but he was actually a bodyguard to the Canadian ambassador to the, I believe it was, Iraq. And the ambassador got killed. And this soldier, lost both of his legs in the process of defending the ambassador. But he's still alive and he has a lot of views like ours. He's a good guy. His name is Paul Franklin. And he said something on Facebook. It was like two sentences. And I said, oh my God, it didn't hit me until a couple hours later. I went back and I searched around. And I found it. And he said, you know, you can't prosecute somebody you've tortured. And I,
well, that's absolutely the truth.
I said, son of a bitch, he's right. If we knew who attacked us on 9/11, if in fact that is what it is, if we knew that this bin Laden had done it, why were we torturing anyone in the world, anywhere, to find out that what we already said that we knew? And then why suddenly, 18 months later, it wasn't important that we find this person that we said committed this crime? Well, we're not looking for him anymore, said the last president. Well, what the hell are you doing? So it's just, there's so much bullshit and propaganda. I'm like, well, who are you looking for? What are you looking for? So, you know, it was about oil to China, but, any case, there's so much, bullshit and spin and propaganda, but here's the president in Hawaii announcing Afghanistan and the 13,000. I'm glad I looked to show you, you educated me about the Roman, thing, which I had learned that from earlier listening to your show, probably maybe a year ago, where, you know, and that did make sense if you were to prosecute in a backwards fashion. But, you know, it seems to be that the world might be sophisticated enough to handle that. Is the United States that? I don't know. But could we be? I don't know. It's almost like there would be some other type of power step in that wouldn't be as good as bad as it is now. So I do have trepidation, but it is a heavy decision to have to make, but I was glad to see the Germans announce, and I did not know the New York Times had endorsed it, and I've even watched Amy Goodman lately, but she's had her fundraising thing, so anyway, Bob,
because we have our fundraising thing every night, so, yeah.
I know you do, Bob. I had to get back to work to make a contribution, but
no worries, Mark, no worries. You have a good evening. It's awful good hearing from you. Thank you for the input and the detail. I appreciate it, Mark.
Merry Christmas, and let's struggle for at least democracy over fascism.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Take care, Mark.
All right, Bob. Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Mark calling from Florida. It's about 5 minutes before the hour. Time to roll on out of here for this Moran Monday. I have a feeling kind of the way I've been consuming dressing and turkey for the last few days, we'll probably have leftovers for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow, although there will be some fresh stuff, too, I well imagine. We find ourselves, thank you, Glenn. Thank you very, very much, Glenn. Glenn stepped in alongside Carol and Jeremy and Gerald, and we now have $75 to go for this evening's fundraising. It would be great if we could wipe that out this evening so that we don't have $225 to do tomorrow evening. Every time we get in a hole, it gets harder to dig out. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for tolerating me being late to Moran Monday this evening. I really do appreciate it. I'm sorry I was late. Well, dadgummit. All I can say is I'm probably going to go to bed in about the next 15 minutes. I am worn the hell out. But you guys make it all also very worthwhile insofar as, well, dadgummit, this, like I've said before, this, people call in and write and email and stuff and say that this is therapy. Well, it's therapy for me, too. So that street runs in both directions. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky, our moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Don't forget to go and read Aaron's Farewell, Michelle. You know, we could make a song parody out of that if we wanted to over at the Head On Radio Network website, Head On Radio Network Facebook page. You will enjoy it. I've already browsed it. Aaron is a damned fine writer. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. A reminder, Dr. Bill will be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I hope you'll join in. He's, all he does is blow your mind. What did our buddy Richard in San Francisco say? Dr. Bill makes me feel like I'm high. Dr. Bill, 1 p.m. tomorrow and Wednesday, and, of course, we'll be back with Titanic Tuesday tomorrow evening. Thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, acact.org, and with only a couple of days to go, thousands of dollars behind the crowdfunding campaign at Indiegogo, Coal River Mountain Watch moving forward. Maybe check it out. Maybe help them out a little bit. We're trying to pull together the Judy Bonds Center for the Appalachian Future. Thank you, one and all. And, of course, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.